Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If a stadium could only talk, for the last time, RFK Stadium, the site of today's match between the Dallas Cowboys and Washington Redskins, another sellout, no surprise there, they've had them since the beginning. RFK Stadium, what a place it is. Pat Summerall here with John Madden, and it's sad in many ways to be a part of the goodbye to this great arena, but it's an honor to be included.
Yeah, it's a real honor, and I think right now there's no place that I would rather be right now than right here at RFK Stadium, and because we've seen so many great players and so many great games here. And
that was Pat Summerall and John Madden, December 22nd, 1996, the day the Redskins played their final game at RFK Stadium. The next fall, they opened up a new stadium in Landover, and things were never and haven't been quite the same. Good morning, everybody. So much to do on this Monday following a Caps win, an NFL draft that produced five new players for Washington, controversy and drama throughout the world of sports all weekend with NBA controversies and crazy endings and Shedeur Sanders getting pranked, but we will carry the press conference at 11 a.m. where Mayor Muriel Bowser, Josh Harris, the owner of the Washington Commanders, and Roger Goodell will be together. Yeah, Roger Goodell will be there as well to announce the deal for RFK at 11 a.m. So keep it here. We'll carry that presser live. We'll carry some of the Q&A that goes on because there are a lot of questions. Real quickly, that was a huge win for the Caps. You know, there were games played this weekend. There were things that are current, not 5 years from now things. What a hit by Tom Wilson early in the third period, set up that game tying goal. Caps with a big third period, really, for the first time in this series. And they win 5-2 to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the series. They get an extra day before Game 5 Wednesday night at home. But really a big win considering that, you know, for a while, down 2-1 and 0-5 on the power play, which included a two-man advantage for about a minute and a half as well. But they came through in the third period. That hit by Tom Wilson was a game changer for sure. I don't know if it should have been penalized or not. I'm not enough of a hockey guy to know. I know his rep precedes him, and there are a lot of people that thought it should have been or could have been or They were surprised it wasn't, but man, what a game-changing play. More on the Caps' big win later on in the show. So the NFL draft is over. Washington had 5 picks going in. They didn't make one trade, not one. All weekend long, they drafted 5 players. The class, like last year's class, is very athletic. We'll get into what they got and what we think a little bit this hour. But Cooley, you'll hear from him on the show. He broke down Josh Connerly Jr. And did that on my podcast on Friday. So I'll play about 15 minutes of that. He likes the player a lot. Ben Standing will join us today on the show at 12. Yeah, what a crazy weekend. Max is with me. I mean, I watched a lot of hoops. I'm not going to lie to you. Certainly watched the Caps. Day 3 of the draft, I had it on. I was certainly following what Washington was doing. I'll tell you, of the 3 players selected on day 3, there is one that I really like a lot, and I'll get to him in a bit. But let's start with, you know, the RFK announcement that is upcoming at 11 a.m. It looks like a go. Now, we learned this, about a week ago when NBC4 broke the news. 2030 is the target. This will be a translucent dome stadium, we're pretty sure. I'm sure we'll hear more about the details of what the stadium will look like during the 11 a.m. press conference. There are still hurdles. You know, this is going to be a very positive, upbeat press conference, and this is a big part of what the mayor has been trying to accomplish. Mayor Bowser has done something here over the last 6 months that will be lasting for her legacy, even though there are more important things. There aren't things that are higher profile or higher exposure than stadiums. Keeping Washington's NBA and NHL team in Chinatown with $515 million of renovation commitment, and then getting the football team back to D.C. after 27 seasons in Maryland with potentially $850-plus million of private and public and taxpayer commitment will certainly be something that she will be remembered for. But there are hurdles. This isn't going to be a done deal when you hear it. I'm sure they will get asked about where the city council is. 12 members currently because of the Ward 8 issue. So they're going to still need 7 out of 12 votes for it to pass. You still have, as it's been explained a couple of times on this show with various guests, you're still going to have zoning challenges. You're going to have the NIMBYs, the not in my neighborhood people. There is a push for a public vote on the ballot for primary season. Those votes typically, when they're voted on by the public, never go well, typically for billionaire owners and cities who want taxpayer dollars for stadiums. So there is still stuff that needs to happen, but it got to at least this point where the city, A, got the land, B, they got a deal done with the team. This was always, I think, the odds-on favorite. Once the land, because they could have done nothing without having the ability have an extended, 100-year lease on the RFK site, the 170-plus acres. And you have a deal between the city, which the city will end up funding a significant part of the infrastructure. The team will build the stadium and the surrounding retail, mixed-use, residential as well, and will benefit from that, I am sure. $3 billion is essentially going to be the price tag, and it looks like, at least for now, and the odds would favor this, that the council will pass and that, you know, those that will push back on this in terms of using taxpayer dollars or using that big parcel of land for a sports stadium, ultimately, I do think we have the news that we've wanted for a long time. And getting Washington's football team, the Redskins, for all of those years. The Commanders did not play at RFK Stadium, just to be clear. There's been a lot of references to bringing the Commanders home. It's bringing the Washington football franchise home, because the Washington football franchise was the resident of D.C. from 1961 through 1996. Bringing the Commanders to their first home in D.C. is a more accurate way of putting it, but we can move on from that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's 5 years away. And what's ironic about all of this is that there is great, I think, happiness among the team's fans. Now, not everybody's thrilled with this. I'm a D.C. resident, and there are many D.C. residents that don't want this. They don't want their taxpayer dollars going to this. But in terms of the team's fan base, overwhelmingly, every poll, every survey, including the team's own internal surveys, have indicated for a long time what we all know, what we've all known intuitively, and that is the home of this football team should be in the city, and that RFK site in particular. Not that it'll look anything like what it used to look like, nor do we want it to, really. Come on. It is 2025 and 2030 when the stadium will open. And there will be massive events at that stadium from 2030 on. I think, you know, once this gets done, we're 10 years or less away from a Super Bowl. Yeah, you'll get a Super Bowl as long as you have the requisite capacity of 65,000 plus, which it'll have. I don't think it'll be much more than 65,000, and a dome stadium in a cold weather city. They'll never do an outdoor cold weather city Super Bowl again. Not after what happened at Giant Stadium when the weather was cold, but it was clear. But less than 12 hours after the game, they had a foot of snow on the ground. They'll never risk their biggest day for that, especially since by the time we get to a Super Bowl in, say, 2032 or 2033, it'll be happening even later than the Super Bowls happen right now. But the irony of this happening now is that the experience in Landover over 27 years was brutal, except for the last year. And it was brutal first and foremost because a losing team most of the time played in that stadium. Had Dan Snyder never purchased the team and there had been a decent owner, a competent owner that had owned the team all of those years at FedEx Field and produced even a modest amount of winning, you know, a normal amount of winning, because the NFL is designed for every franchise to win occasionally, to have a really good season or two occasionally, to be in the postseason and maybe even win a game or two occasionally. Our franchise didn't do that for 26 years, from 97 through the 2023 season. It couldn't, because it was so poorly run. It was the clown show of all clown shows in sports. And if the team had had winning teams, it would have produced some winning memories and some big-time games, and we wouldn't have hated it as much as we did. But when you combined the losing and the embarrassing losing with a stadium that wasn't very attractive, nor was RFK, with some of the worst traffic issues that they never could figure out. And part of that is just our city and the traffic issues it has and the Beltway, you know, where when you have a ton of traffic and it seems like it never ceases, no matter what time of day or night, no matter what day of the week. Seems like Saturday or Sunday. It doesn't matter if there's a game or not a game. There's traffic. But everything about that stadium was unpleasant. But it started with the team. The team wasn't any good. The team was an embarrassment. The stadium became a mark for opposing fans to move in and take over. That started 2007, 2008. Never forget the night the Steelers fans came in for Sunday Night Football and literally took the stadium over. That wasn't a 50-50 deal. That was an 80-20 deal, one way. 80-20, 80 Steelers fans, 20 Washington fans. But it'll be nice to get away from it. But the irony is, after all of those years, now this team looks poised to go on a run. We haven't had a run since the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. There hasn't been a run. There hasn't been a several-year period where the team's been a contender. Teams coming off 14 regular season wins, 16 overall out of, you know, their 21, you know, games played. 20 games played. 14 wins. 6 losses. And an NFC championship loss to the Eagles, in which they were 60 minutes away from advancing to the Super Bowl. They have a quarterback for the first time who looks to be elite. These last 5 seasons, you know, the 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29 seasons at FedEx Field, Northwest Field, excuse me, the stadium in Landover, may be the greatest run of the stadium's history just as it's about to close. We will likely have a lot of really good memories as fans of this team over the final 5 years. I mean, what's the over-under on playoff games that'll be played there? Only 4 playoff games over 27 seasons were played in Landover. There was a game against Detroit after the 99 season, wild card game. There was a game that was infamous in January of 2013, RG3's injury game against Seattle. There was a game against Green Bay after the 2015 season. Aaron Rodgers came in and beat Washington. And then remember, and this is the one I forgot when we were talking about this about a week ago, is that they had a home game, not that there were any fans there, in 2020 during COVID, when Washington, as a 7-9 division winner, hosted Tampa. 4 playoff games in all of those years. 1-3 in terms of the record in those playoff games. What's the over-under on playoff games at Northwest Field over the final 5 years? It's got to be 5.5, 6, 6.5. They're going to play home playoff games. They're going to play playoff games. We know that. Hopefully, plenty of playoff games. There is a real possibility over the final 5 seasons of this stadium, they'll have 5 times the number of meaningful and memorable games than they had in the 27 years that preceded the final 5. But this is really good news. It's a long way off, but we'll get to watch the progress together. And let's hope, you know, the hurdles are cleared. I would assume that there is great confidence, and we'll hear that this morning at 11, that they can get the city council to pass this, that they can get the proper zoning, that they can make the pitch, which they have to do. They're going to have to pitch how good this is for the city, the resurrection of that plot of land in particular, which has been a blight. You know, it's been sitting there vacant for so long. And yet, you know, within 2 to 3 blocks of that neighborhood are beautiful neighborhoods and very nice areas. And so they're going to turn something, hopefully, that isn't pretty into something that's great for the city. I'm excited about that as a resident of D.C., to see maybe what was done in Chinatown by Abe Poland be accomplished by Josh Harris and this mayor at the RFK site. But it'll be exciting. We're 5 years away from it, but a big announcement, and I'm sure a lot of questions hopefully answered at 11 a.m. Again, we'll carry that live on the show. All right, I want to come back and talk a little bit about the draft from over the weekend because I know that's important to many of you. We'll go through the 4 picks that have been made since we last did a show here. But on the way out of this segment, there is one of my all-time favorite sort of beginnings of a game at RFK Stadium. that I've played so many times on this show over the years. It's one that's available on YouTube. The whole game is. In 1986, Washington and the New York Giants played a game in December of that year at RFK Stadium. They were the two best teams in the league. This was for first place in the NFC East, which would lead to eventually home field advantage throughout the postseason. Now, this was the year the Giants went on to win the Super Bowl, led by Lawrence Taylor in his MVP season. But this gives you a sense of the stadium, the importance of it, the games that were played. This was the league's most, the league's, not the division, not the conferences, the league's biggest game of the year. And this is how it was introed by Pat Summerall.
Redskins' offensive line is one of football's best, but today their reputation will be challenged by Lawrence Taylor and a fired-up New York defense. The Giants are confidently riding the crest of a six-game winning streak. And with the right calls from Phil Sims, they hope to roll a seven today. Giants also face some stiff challenges today. First, their defense must contain Washington's fleet receivers, like Gary Clark. And their unheralded pass blockers will have to contend with Dexter Manley, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Manley relishes the spotlight, and today it shines brightly in the season's biggest game. Morris ran the Giants to victory in their first meeting, but today's rematch is at RFK Stadium, where the Skins are hard to beat and where tickets are impossible to find. CBS Sports presents the National Football League. Today it's the New York Giants against the Redskins of Washington, live from RFK Stadium, sold out for the 157th consecutive time. And believe me, there is no place to play, no more enthusiastic setup than RFK.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Halliburton, 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Halliburton for the lead. 1.3 to go. Pacers by one. Porter to inbound it. No. Giannis is going to take it now. Here's Gary Trent Jr. Let's it fly. And the Pacers are moving on. What a comeback in overtime.
Yeah, that game last night, insane. The Pacers overcame a 7-point deficit in the final 35 seconds to shock Milwaukee in overtime, 119-118. That was about the only shot that Gary Trent missed over the final 20 or so minutes. The heave from three-quarters court. Joining me right now to talk some NBA playoffs, which is what I'm looking forward to doing, is Chris Miles. Chris, of course, a host at NBA TV. He was here for a while at NBC Sports Washington. You can follow him on X, on Twitter, at Chris Miles TV. I'm so into this right now, and I have been from the jump, and you know this town. It's been all draft, and then this week it's been all stadium talk, etc. But these playoffs have been unbelievable, especially the last couple of days. I actually want to start with last night in Indiana. Look, I thought Milwaukee put up an incredible effort. I thought they were going to go out meekly last night in five. But I want to ask you about why you thought they blew the lead at the end, the follow-up with Giannis and Halliburton's father, and then where Giannis goes. Let's start with just the end of the game and the meltdown by the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things happening, and that's exactly why we had a 30-minute show discussing all of those things, right? Yeah. Like, as soon as the buzzer ended, there was so much to talk about, including Giannis's post-game press conference where he really opened up. So let's get to your first question, right? The Milwaukee Bucks, I believe the Pacers scored 8 points in the last 33 seconds is the stat, right? And it's two turnovers, both by Gary Trent Jr., who had 12 points in overtime. Like you said, he had made 7 threes after halftime, after going 0-for-7 from three-point range in the first half. Yeah. Okay, so that's like, that was the big story. Gary Trent Jr., will he be able to do this? Can the Bucks come back from being down 3-1 with Giannis, you know, having a 30-20-10 game, which is only the fourth player in NBA history to do that in the playoffs, right? Like, that's what was happening. And as soon as they turn the ball over, you're like, this is a new storyline. The reason they lost is they didn't have ball handlers. I mean, A.J. Green is throwing a pass to Gary Trent Jr., who's a spot-up shooter. So it's one spot-up shooter throwing it to another spot-up shooter, which are the type of players you want to put around Giannis. But when you don't have Damian Lillard on the floor or Chris Middleton that they traded away to the Wizards, right? Or, you know, if you want to go even back further, Drew Holiday, like, go, that's where those players excelled and helped the Bucks to win and, you know, win a championship. They don't have that anymore. And you saw the collapse. I mean, A.J. Green threw it to the only place where Gary Trent Jr. couldn't catch it, in between his legs at the floor, right? Like, I mean, if you play basketball, you know, there's like one place where you can't save the ball if it's thrown in your direction. Your legs. Where you're like, Like, what is he – like, you could have – anywhere else, and the game's over. So, kudos to Tyrese Halliburton, though, not settling for a three. We see that so much in the NBA where guys, you know, get in a situation like, oh, I'm just going to shoot this three. Halliburton, who actually struggled to score in the fourth quarter at OT, made the most timely buckets, and, like, that's kind of him, where you're like, oh, maybe he's not as good as these other stars in the league. And then the game comes down to the final 30 seconds or the final possessions, and he looks like one of the best players we've ever seen. And that's like what happened with Tyrese Halliburton. So it's
first
just amazing,
all,
isn't
you,
it?
I thought it was interesting because, you know, he got a screen and a switch, and it was almost like he wanted Giannis to guard him. And he went right around him. Like, that seemed to me to be not the matchup that he would have wanted in that situation to drive the ball. Or even to take a jump shot.
Well, here's the thing you learn about, you know, being around some of these players as far as their basketball IQ. It's so much higher than we realize as far as them understanding other players' tendencies. And, you know, you always hear in the NBA, oh, they don't play defense. Tyrese Halliburton, I bet you if we listened in to what he had to say, he probably knew, like, okay, if I get Giannis on me, he's going to go all out if I look like I'm going to shoot the three. Right? Like, he probably had that in his mind. And we all know Tyrese Halliburton has that slow windup. So
yeah,
for Giannis, you
true.
Can wait till he picks the ball up. Right?
Yeah.
He's not like a quick release Steph Curry type. And Halliburton uses basketball IQ to take advantage of an over aggressive defender. And we see Giannis hurt his hand being over aggressive on defense. Like, that's kind of, I mean, if you're going to knock someone who is an all time great, you know, over-aggressive on defense is kind of like a thing you can expect from him if you're someone who has the ball in their hands.
You mentioned Giannis, 30, 20, and 13, along with two blocks and two steals. He had seven turnovers. He also missed a bunch of free throws, which were hurtful. But so for those that weren't watching last night, after Indiana pulls off this miracle comeback to end the series and advance to the second round, Milwaukee's done. After the game, Tyrese Halliburton's father, John, confronted Giannis, apparently cussing him out on the floor. You can kind of get into, you know, what the confrontation was, whether or not he should be there. But, you know, Giannis, per usual, had a very thoughtful response afterwards and said that was uncalled for. You know, loves Tyrese Halliburton as a player, et cetera. So just give everybody who did not watch what, you know, took place when this game ended, kind of a you know, quick, you know, what happened and then your thoughts on it.
Well, so there's a number of things because we did hear Giannis's perspective as opposed to what we see as viewers. First and foremost, the game ends. It's a heave by Gary Trent Jr., right? Giannis inbounded the ball and was behind the play. And you kind of see him soaking it all in, right? Like, he's standing there like, man, we really just lost in the first round for third straight year. Well, Tyrese Halliburton's dad is sitting behind the basket from where Giannis inbounded the ball. He jumps up. He had obviously has on a Tyrese Halliburton jersey. He has a big poster, a big towel with his son's face on it. And this is where it goes awry because the ball's in the air and it drops. And Giannis is kind of like, wow, right? And you see Tyrese Halliburton's dad walk directly in front of Giannis. And Giannis stops moving. And he puts the towel up. And according to Giannis, Tyrese Halliburton's dad was cursing at him, right? Like, that's who, F word, S word, right? Like, this is what Giannis says happened. So we understand this to be true because Tyrese Halliburton has said that that's what happened, and Tyrese Halliburton's dad said the same thing. Now, talking to several people, which I did have the privilege last night, right? I watched it myself, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, we're security. Like, security is not supposed to let fans on the court immediately, even if it's someone's dad. And it's interesting to hear different perspectives, right? Because I sat next to Vince Carter. I showed him the video for the first time. And he's like, what is this? What is going on here? Like, no parent or brother is supposed to get on the court and do that, right? Then Giannis laments about his upbringing and how you should be humble in your winning, which I thought is what we need to hear from NBA stars, right? Like, that's what you need to hear. But then from a complete different perspective, I walk back and I think the Clippers Nuggets game was still on. And, you know, we were done talking about the Bucks Pacers. And I go to talk to talk to Kenny and Shaq about it, right? Because we were sitting there watching the game.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard the clip. So Shaq like beckons me over. So I guess that they must have discussed this on the show. I have not seen the clip that you're referencing right now, right? And he's like, Chris, you know, like, he's got to have thicker skin than that. And I'm like, no, you can't have fans on the court. And then Shaq's like, look, man, I heard worse things when I was playing at LSU. Like, these things, you know, my parents taught me that you just kind of, like, have to be the bigger man. And I'm like, Shaq, Giannis didn't move. He looked at Tyrese Haliburton. He's like, well, look what he did after. He grabbed Ben Mathurin's head. And he did. I'm like, you know what? You're right. Giannis probably shouldn't be talking to this man's dad in that way. And he's like, and Shaq is explaining, you've never seen me act like that. And it's interesting to hear his perspective, yeah, right? Of basically saying you can't double down the wrong and that Giannis is wrong for escalating this situation. And I hadn't thought of it like that. And I'm like, man, like, it's incredible to hear one of the greatest players of all time give his perspective and to not be on, because in my mind, I'm thinking Shaq's all like, yeah, Giannis, good stuff. And Shaq's like, nope, you can't do that. Like, you're big, you're strong. You have to, you know, go about your business, take it for what it is, and move on with your life and go, you know, discuss it in the press conference. But what he was saying is Giannis was out of pocket for all of the extra stuff. And it kind of changed my perspective. And I thought it was like phenomenal to have that privilege to hear that. Now, what he said on the show, I don't know if that's what he said, but yeah, it was interesting to hear from him.
Yeah, so hold on, Max, you have the Shaq comment on this? Because I was watching it when he said it. Do you have that?
Yeah, sure do.
How long is it?
A minute 20.
All right, go ahead, play it, and Chris can listen to it.
No, he's not supposed to be on the court.
He's
not supposed to be on the court.
Giannis talked to him. Forget all that.
No, he was on the court.
So what?
No, you think he said something? He probably know who his dad is.
Stop it. Giannis said something.
No, yeah, because he's on the court in his face.
So what? Everybody on the court.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can.
No, you cannot do that.
Giannis said something to him.
So you think his dad was
great?
No, his dad was 100% wrong.
Giannis is wrong?
Bro, Giannis said something to him.
No, he did not. Yes, he did. No, he not.
Look, right now.
No, his dad is coming up to him. What is his dad doing on the court?
Giannis,
his dad is not supposed to be on the court. You can yell as much as you want to. He's an idiot. If you think that's right, you're an idiot too.
Giannis says something.
No, I'm just telling you. That dad is an idiot. And if you think he's an idiot, you're an idiot too.
I will say that.
No,
his dad is always on the court.
No, I will say this. We all have met his dad, and he has.
His dad's always on the court.
He should be on the court.
You don't have an entitlement
because your son is playing to be on the court.
Hold on, time out. He's always on the court.
He should be on the court. I don't care.
He's always on the court.
He should not be on the court talking to other players.
Bro, Giannis said something to him. He didn't say nothing to Giannis. No, he did not.
No, that's not true.
He couldn't have said anything.
Walking in the line behind his son.
He should. What do you mean walking in line behind his son? He shouldn't be on the court. He didn't play in the game.
Always on the court.
No, he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be
on the court.
No,
there's no entitlement for
that.
So let me just mention, okay, there was more to that where Shaq kind of expressed what he expressed to you, Chris, because I want to say that I had the exact same reaction you did. Watching it, I'm like, what is his father doing on the floor? Listening to Giannis, I'm like, wow, what a response. Because Giannis is thoughtful, he's self-aware, all of those things. And then when listening to Shaq, I'm like, you know what? The best reaction from Giannis would have been, we lost, congratulations to them, and let everybody else fight that battle. Because those players do deal with a lot more than that. The father shouldn't have been on the floor. I'm not disagreeing with that. But I think I ended up having the same reaction you did after listening to Shaq last night, which is they deal with a lot. And I know Giannis was emotional and he's sharing his thoughts, you know, almost stream of conscious, you know, in that moment. But it's like, let everybody else fight that and ensure that the father never is on the floor again in that situation. By the way, for those that, again, haven't followed this, the father apologized on social media. The son, Tyrese Haliburton, apologized on behalf of his father, etc. But anyway, that was the situation last night. They're not going to kick him out of games moving forward, do you think?
No, no. And the other thing is, there's a code of conduct in the sense of having an even it's interesting listening to that clip from the show because they're yelling over each other.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
On the show. And it's crazy because we sit in there together for hours. So I truly get to understand what they're trying to say. And all of them have good points, and none of them really got it across in that clip you played.
Right? Yeah.
So it's like, Chuck is right. Like, hey, this guy's always on the court, right? But Shaq is wrong in the sense of Tyrese Halliburton's dad not saying anything. Like, Tyrese Halliburton's dad cursed at Giannis. Giannis is standing there not reacting, and then he's like, hold on. You guys, this is too much. Like, what are you doing here? And then he says, like, you know, my dad's not with me anymore. He wouldn't do this. I was not brought up this way. So you can see the anger. The other part that needs to be understood is when you play the clip of Giannis talking about the incident is right after he was asked, are you leaving Milwaukee? Right? And the fact that he was noncommittal, the fact that at the trade deadline, had privilege to understand that, like, he's probably gone, and that they asked him that first, and he's sitting there like, is this really happening? Like, think about how incredible he played in this series, in this game, and to think, like, this might be his last game in a Bucks uniform.
Yeah, I know.
A guy is arguably the first or second best player in franchise history.
We're talking to Chris Miles. Would you say the first is Lou Alcindor before he became Kareem?
Yeah, those are the two names, right? It's one of those two,
right.
And really, Giannis has done more with the franchise, but I don't know if, it's like Oscar Robertson, it's like Lou Alcindor, Giannis, Oscar Robertson, whatever you want to do with that, but I would say, that's the comment.
Yeah, after that, I don't know, Sidney Moncrief. We can go down the list.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah.
All right, let's move on because let's move on to that. So I am curious, what are the teams that people are talking about for Giannis?
Here's what I would say, and this is where it gets difficult for me in confidential information and things I can and cannot say, right? And I will say this. I know the Miami Heat have been a suitor. I don't know how much has been reported, but I would imagine that would be his priority destination and mutual interest, and I think they have been aligning themselves to make that happen. That is the first part. Second part is if Giannis is on the open market, like if this is a Luka Doncic deal, which like, oh, here, you're gone, right? Like, okay, Miami's it. That's where he wants to go. That's what it's going to be, right? But I think on the flip side of that, if it's an open market, then we have to have more logical conversations. Like the San Antonio Spurs have the assets, the cap to absorb for Milwaukee and their ownership to like save money and also rebuild. You got two, once the draft lottery hits on May 12th, you got two potential high lottery picks coming in for San Antonio to go along with all of these assets of guys that like they got too many guys and not enough stars, right? It's like Victor Wembanyama, De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle would be the three guys that they're not going to move. Then everything else Milwaukee could be interested in. I mean, they've got a lot of pieces. So I do wonder if that becomes a pairing, like Giannis and San Antonio, how incredible that would be for Giannis, for the NBA, and really changing the landscape of things. And then the Houston Rockets. I mean, they have a ton of assets that really don't fit. Yeah. And now the narrative with them is they need a bona fide star. And Ime Udoka is the Giannis type of coach. Like, these are things that I think those are the logical destinations when you look at assets and, Giannis in fitting. But I do think he played his last game as a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, I kind of assumed that at the trade deadline. I was like, okay, well, if the Bucks make a long run, maybe that's not the case. Going out in the first round three consecutive years, playing the way that he's playing, I think this is the summer he needs.
We're talking to Chris Miles from NBA TV. I'm going to save my wild thought about if the Wizards end up with a poor draft lottery selection and they're not in the Cooper flag or the Dylan Harper sweepstakes, about just, scratching the plan right now and bringing in Durant and Giannis and just going for it next year. We can talk about that down the road. All right. The NBA has been phenomenal here over the last couple of days. I want to go to late last night and what Denver did to the Clippers, you know, after the incredible ending on Saturday. They're up 3-2. This is the team that I've actually got a rooting interest in. I'm just a huge Kawhi Leonard guy and have been forever. James Harden's been terrible so far in this series. He was terrible again last night, defensively, offensively. Why is it that Harden this time of year, especially when a series gets late in a series, there have been some moments in his career, but his playoff legacy is not a good one, and I don't think he's adding to it right now. What do you think?
I think it's a different style of basketball in the postseason. And as talented as he is, you know, Kawhi Leonard is built for the playoffs. Giannis is built for the playoffs. Joker, Jamal Murray, if you look at their games, they trim that. There's no fat on their games. James Harden's game is like a juicy steak, you know, but if you're trying to lean up, it's just not the right fit for the playoffs, the way that you have to play basketball. And I think we see that a lot with players who can put up regular season numbers. And, I mean, I think James Harden is a first ballot Hall of Famer, phenomenal basketball player. But when you watch him, it's like, all right, how many dribbles is it going to take right now?
How long
is he going to have possession of the ball? Like these, I mean, you know, and that's a regular season game. And I think, look, the last 3 years, the NBA has changed so much that a guy like Donovan Mitchell has adjusted. He used to dribble way more. I'm sure there's an advanced stat on that where even in the regular season this year, that was taken out of the game a bit, and James Harden has dialed it back. But in the playoffs, everyone is dialed in. The teams you're facing, everyone can play defense and are hustling as hard as they can. And that's what it is. I mean, it's not like...
Yeah.
I think this is the caliber player he is when we get to this. Like, he's really, really good. But I think playoff James Harden, when I look at the all-time greats, is how I view him.
Look, I'm going to compare him to a player who was in the finals last year. And this player is younger and is going to be considered one of the all-time great scorers and shot makers. But there were 14 possessions in the game on Sunday in Minnesota where the only player on Los Angeles's team that touched the ball from the moment it was inbounded in the backcourt was Luka Doncic. And sometimes it's the same thing with Harden. The ball just sticks, and this time of year, it's tough. Even when they make tough shots or make really good plays, I just don't think it's sustainable 4 out of 7 in 4 straight series.
Well, I mean, people thought I was an insane person because, look, if there's a team in which I have a lot of contacts, it's the Dallas Mavericks. And you can go look it up or, you know, Google search it and see my interviews with Luka.
I trust you.
But it's like one of those things where, I'll tell you this, when they made that run to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, we went down to Dallas for a real training camp, right? So it's like the preseason and, you know, we're basically doing a glorified practice is what we do as a show, right? And we highlight the players. And there was this air of, we are tired of him. That was it, right? Of like, and not from players and coaches, from people who work on the staff. And what I mean is, like, when you walk into the practice facility, there's a 60-year-old guy that's like, oh, everybody hates this guy. And they're like, wait, all these people that have worked here for 20, 25 years hate Luka Doncic, who is like the guy bringing all the money in. So when I started to hear that and understand that, and I watched him complain to the refs and turn the ball over, and then being, you know, covering the finals last year, game 3, I'll take you behind the curtain a bit. The game ends, and you know, I always hear terrible stuff about Kyrie Irving as like his personality, right? And I'm trying to explain to people that, you know, they lost game 3. Kyrie had his best game of the series after 2 bad games, and it's like finals is over, you're down 3-0, right? And I see Luka, and I'm like, oh, let me give Luka his space. He's going with his people. And I kind of noticed Luka's not talking to his teammates, right? He's just off, getting in his car, gone. No problem with that at all. But then I see Kyrie with his kids and his wife, right? He's walking over, and he's with 2 or 3 teammates. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, Kyrie's with a group of teammates, and they're talking about what just happened, right? And I see him, and I'm like, I should not disturb him right now. He interrupts his own path. He comes over. Hey, Chris. I'm like, oh, hey, Kyrie. He's like, I'm like, tough one. He's like, yeah, you know, hopefully we can get the next one. And he has this, like, positive, upbeat personality, and he's bringing it to his teammates. And for me, when I think of the Luka Doncic experience, and I watch him yell at Dorian Finney-Smith at half court after he turns the ball over.
Right.
Right? And,
yeah.
And anyone that's ever played basketball, if you've coached an eighth grader, you say, don't put the ball where the any line or the out-of-bounds can become a defender and then call for a pick.
Right.
Like, what are you doing, right? And then he yells at Dorian Finney-Smith, who's not the greatest screen setter. He's a 3-and-D guy. So I just think, you know, the Lakers are going to build around Luka. It's going to take a year or two, but you can't have Luka and LeBron when you got a maniac like Anthony Edwards out there who wants to take your crown.
Yeah, interesting stuff on Luka Doncic with Chris Miles. All right, I've taken up too much of your time, but just let's go real quickly. Houston, Golden State, what an incredible first four games. As physical as any of the series been that have been played, do you give Houston any chance of coming back?
No, I think, you know, I had Houston winning that series, right? But no, they can't come back for this reason alone. Experience. You got three guys who are feeling like it's their last dance, and Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Jimmy Butler, right? Like, I know they have contracts that extend past this year, but if you look at how they're playing, this in their mind is their last dance. And when I listened to what Jalen Green had to say after he scored his 38 points in game two, right?
Yeah, the only
it was this like
for him.
But there's a reason. He goes, yes, I had the jitters. Yes, there was nervousness in that first home game. Then he felt comfortable a second playoff home game. Then they hit the road, and it's back to, what's going on here? And I think that that's permeating throughout the team. Alperen Şengün, yes, he's playing well, but there's still a sense of like, okay, feeling it out. Amen Thompson doesn't look like how good that he is. I think that this is the, okay, we made the playoffs here. This is what it feels like. So we're going to go back to the lab. We're going to tweak the roster a little bit. And then next year, watch out for us. That's just what I feel on Houston now that we saw them. I mean, you never know how these players are going to react in their first playoff game. But now that we've seen it, it's like, okay, they're done. They're not going to beat Steph Curry unless Steph Curry is hurt early in, you know, the closeout game. But like, that's what it is. The Warriors are going to move on past the Rockets, even though I did have the Rockets beating Golden State.
You know, it's funny, Chris, watching that series. Like, I've watched all four games, and I'm like, man, Houston is actually in many ways the team that's more dangerous and even better. But it's just that Steph didn't let them lose Game 3 when Butler wasn't there. Jimmy didn't let them lose Game 4 when it hung in the balance. And I just think you're right on the experience. What'll be really interesting is a Golden State-Minnesota series, because I think we're going to get that. I'm assuming you think Minnesota will close out the Lakers at some point, even if it's not tonight.
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
Yes. I mean, look, I think people are starting to get it. But Anthony Edwards' conditioning and his work ethic, I mean, people don't really understand. And, you know, I get all the – people hear the off-the-court stuff and be like, oh, it's Ja Morant again. No. Ja Morant drinks alcohol. We've seen him with the tequila shots. Anthony Edwards doesn't drink alcohol. He doesn't do – like, I don't think people understand that when he says he doesn't want to be the face of the league. Like, we had that interview with him at All-Star.
Yeah.
And that had already come out. And we asked – I can send you the clip. I asked him it four times in the interview. He's like, no, I want to play basketball. Like, I don't want to do these other – and that's because, like, he really wants to go to the gym, watch basketball, talk about football, talk about basketball, and all of these other things in his brain, they're a distraction. Oh, you guys want me to be the face of the league so that you can, you know, take me away from basketball. But that's how his brain operates. So I think some of the things that he said has been like almost taken the wrong way. But if you really listen to what he's saying, you kind of realize like this is a 23-year-old kid that really wants to play basketball. It is not as caught up in the lifestyle as some of his peers and predecessors as we think because of, you know, the other breaking news.
All right, I got to run. I took you too much of your time, and I'm way past my break. I could sit here and do this with you for another hour, though. But just give me real quickly, finals matchup, who wins?
Man, I have no idea, right? And I do.
Well, it's
going to
be Boston, isn't it?
All season. No, I don't know that.
You
for
like
certain.
Cleveland?
I don't. I'm saying, like, I watched Cleveland, and I'm like, man, they punched Miami in the mouth and took their willpower where Miami's like, why are we here now, right? And when I look at the depth of both rosters, like, here's what the players tell me, and this is what's important. Cleveland's backcourt is still too small, and the series against Boston, that's going to be the determining factor. And I'm like, okay. But Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, if they play that way, then, I mean, Mobley looked – that one game that Cleveland beat Boston last year in the playoffs, Mobley was incredible. And he has that, like, in his mind, like, if I play this way, we win. Like, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be – I'm just excited for that series. They're going to face OKC, though. Like, OKC's coming out of the way.
All right. Let's see if they've got the experience to match up with the Warriors when they get there. I'd like to see that. Although I think the next series will be tough for OKC too. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it as always. Good stuff.
Yep. Thanks for having me. Yep.
Chris Miles, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980, theteam980.com. When we come back, I'll tell you something that I forgot to say during the Shedeur Sanders situation that I think is beneficial for him. Next.
With the 45th selection, the Redskins have chosen defensive back from Mississippi State, Fred Smoot.
Yeah, Smoot was supposed to be in that 2001 draft, a first-round pick, but there was a big old party in Starkville a few weeks earlier, and the league was looking into Fred's role in it. He ended up going in the second round to Washington, and Marty Schottenheimer, who was making the picks that particular year. Smoot joined me the other day on my podcast to talk draft. Here's how it went. Overall, before we get to a couple of these players, what did you think?
I loved it. Like, listen, because I have been very intrigued in studying Adam Peters and the way he do things, and I didn't look at this draft and worry about what players we got because he did such a masterful job in free agency. All right, so let's supplement what we really got in this draft. We really got Laramie Tunsil, an All-Pro left tackle with a third round pick. We got Deebo Samuels with a fourth round pick. We got a right tackle that can play left. That's one of the best, if not the most athletic, currently is tackle in this draft. Used to play running back in junior high school and high school. This dude is look up his athletic numbers. They blow you through the roof.
Yeah.
Then you still trade Amos, who had a first round grade. You talking about me having a first round grade in 01? The same thing you getting from Trey Amos, and you stuff in another room. Like you stuff in another room to the max of competition. Let me take you down this offensive line, Professor, and I'm going to tell you what the future holds. Last time we won a Super Bowl, we had the Hogs. Right now, we're getting the Wild Boys together. And this is what we got as of today. We have a Pro Bowl left tackle. We have a Pro Bowl center. Tim Cosme, when he's healthy, is a Pro Bowl guard. What I seen from our guy last year that we drafted, he now moving to guard becomes a asset that can, now his ceiling and his floor goes through the roof. So that means four out of the five offensive linemen have Pro Bowl capabilities. That itself sets you up for success. I've been screaming since I've been playing football here. If you don't have the fat boys that smell like bacon to dominate, we will never dominate consistently. Right now, we are suiting up for trench warfare, and that's not sexy to people. And I don't need it to be sexy to people, because when you do sexy picks, That means you're probably a losing organization. You know what was a sexy pick? Cam Ward was a sexy pick to a losing organization. Sexy winning teams always go offensive lineman. Kansas City, you see the Ravens, how they draft. They don't draft for need, because if you draft for need, you're already behind. You drafting best player available because you have that option to, that gives you power.
By the way, when you were talking about Tunsil for the picks and Debo for the picks, you left out Marshawn Lattimore for, you know.
Yes! So you got a Pro Bowl corner also. So what he's been doing to people, I would hate to throw the word fleecing out there, but, you know, we got fleeced for Trent Williams years ago, and this guy was in that room also. So fleecing is something he knows about.
Yeah. They got three players with our third, fourth, and sixth round picks. All right. So before we get to some more specifics about the players that you just, you know, went through, who did you want them to take when they were on the clock at 29? I know you trust Adam Peters, but you were screaming for somebody. Who was it?
Well, I was screaming for Ezerike. Donovan Ezerike from
Boston College. Ezeraku from Boston College.
I liked him, but I was really more fascinated with James Pierce Jr.
Okay.
Because if you get an edge, he reminds me of the Freak. He reminds me, you got a guy that big running a 4.440. I can find a place for you on my roster. All right? Like, I can figure something out. And now that we got the right locker room, now we can take these chances. So I was high on him. But what I love about Peters, he went the opposite direction. And he went offensive tackle because he realized, think about the guys we got to block. He's over there paired up with Micah Parsons now. Then we got to realize we still got Philadelphia in the defensive line. They got with Jalen Doomsday Carter. We also got the New York Giants and everything they just did with Abdul Carter. They got Thibodeau. They got Dexter Lawrence. Like, so he said, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Burns, like, you're talking about pass rushing galore. So we had to, we went and we did it on the offense side of the ball. So I was all with it. When I seen the draft pick, then I went, really looked at that kid and realized this kid just doesn't get beat. And when he gets beat, his lateral movement is ridiculous. Like, he can get anywhere on the spot on the field he wants to get.
All right. Tell me about Trey Amos.
Trey Amos, long, great ball skills, willing to stick his head in there and tackle. He was actually charted as one of the most well-rounded cornerbacks in this draft, meaning not great at one thing, but good at everything. And that's what he brings to the table. He's also a competitor. He's very smart. He knows how to read route combination. He's good at press. He can play off man, and he's pretty good at zone. He's going to push, because I realize now in the league, you don't start two corners, you start three corners. Like, he's going to push to be a starter on it. Like, I'm very intrigued to see how this goes with him, especially with all the stuff that he brings to the table. And it didn't start just at Ole Miss. He was showing these things at Alabama when he was there too, but he knows how to get to the ball, and he's sticky in coverage. Don't get a lot of penalties. He's a clean prospect in that way. I thought he was a steal of the draft, like, even though I feel like we got a steal later on in the draft.
All right, we'll get to later on, but of the corners that you looked at and spent time looking at before the draft, take Will Johnson and Travis Hunter out of the equation. Tell me who you really liked. I'm just curious because we didn't have this conversation before the weekend, but I want to know who the corners that you were talking about last week and the week before.
I had a man crush on Siobhan Revelle. Okay. Listen, the Cowboys had a draft. Nobody wants to talk about it. But I thought the Cowboys knocked the draft out. I thought they had an A-plus draft. And Revelle, what you get with him, I hate to paint this picture and put this pressure on this kid. I saw a faster Richard Sherman. I saw a Richard Sherman with a 4.3, and that's a lethal weapon to me. At 6.3, you cannot throw fades on him. Nobody could throw fades on Richard Sherman. With that wingspan, it just will not happen. But guess what? At 6.3, he has the ability to stop, start, and get out of cuts. I can always tell a great defensive back if they can pick off over routes. Like, as a defensive back, it's three levels of the over route. If he got a step on me, I'm trying to get the tackle. If I'm right there with him, I can break the ball up. Rarely do you go under it and pick him off. I've watched this kid do it numerous times because of his wingspan and because of his speed. I thought he was a steal. I thought he was special. I know it was red flags about him being injured,
yeah, right.
But I thought he was one of the best in this draft, and I thought he was the steal. Now Darian Porter, another guy.
Hello. That was my guy.
Listen, he's so raw, it scares you. You know what I'm saying? Because he hasn't played but a year cornerback. But at 6'3", not a 6'3 cornerback, and I'm talking about measurables jump off of this sheet of paper that you put them on. Now, the question is age, and how long does it take him to really get comfortable at the position? I like Kobe Bryant. He didn't even get drafted. I thought he was one of the fierce competitors. Like, the one prospect that me and Logan went back and forth with, we could never really figure out what you're getting, is Baron out of
John A. Baron from Texas. Yeah.
Texas, yes. He makes plays. He's all over the field. He's
right.
Very good in zone, but looks kind of stiff sometimes. Also, don't look like the most twitchiest athlete I've seen. I don't know if he's an outside corner. I think he might be a lifetime nickel. Like, I don't know what I'm getting at. So it was a couple of guys that jumped off the page to me, but it was deeper draft than people said it was at cornerback.
You know, you talk about loading up at a position. I mean, Denver took Baron, and they have a few corners. You know, they've got a guy named Pat Surtain who isn't that bad. I thought that was interesting because they really wanted a running back. But you mentioned Porter. That was the guy that I talked about because I know that he didn't get around to playing corner until this year, and I don't know why. Part of it is he was an offensive player, but I don't think there was a guy in the draft that was that tall, had those arms, the length of his arms, and ran 4.3. Like, he's a freak. Now, maybe he's super raw, but
yeah.
The physical part of it, and I thought just looking at him on tape this year, and I'm not an expert, you are, but he really anticipates well. Like, he just had a knack as an offensive player before.
I'm finna say he thinks like a receiver.
Yeah.
So he takes that and he plays it on defense. And same semblance of Travis Hunter. He goes about playing the position offensively. Champ played it offensively. Deion Sanders played it offensively. And that's what you get. Like, we always had this conversation in the DB room, what position did you play on offense? Now, you get a guy like Sean Spring played running back. So you got two type of corners. You got your cornerback that play running back, and you got your cornerback that play wide receiver. It tends to be the XY receivers tend to play the ball a tad better because
right.
They're still thinking like a wide receiver. So Porter did that on defense this year.
But I'm sure there were some corners along the way that played quarterback too at some point, right? So what were those guys like?
I'm going to say mostly the guys that play quarterback end up playing safety.
True.
For some odd reason. So they're still back barking calls. They still play in the middle of the field, and they still play in the middle of the field like a quarterback would.
All right. Jalen Lane, Virginia Tech, fourth round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
he can go get it. When I watch him, very twitchy, can get down the field. Built well. Of course, Virginia Tech didn't throw the ball as much, so his numbers just ain't going to blow you away. But I don't see a weakness to his game. Like, when you look at his game, do you see a weakness to his game?
No, but you know what I noticed? Because I didn't really know him before they picked him. I think his vision as a runner is better as a returner than it is as a receiver. I don't know if that makes any sense, because it shouldn't be any different. But his vision and cutback ability as a returner is outstanding.
So you feel like he sees the field totally as a returner, and he sees half the field as a runner.
Maybe, but he's got such great speed that there's a lot of separation, too, especially in college.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's what I think, that's what the thing that they wanted. Like, he's the ultimate clear out, take the top off the defense guy.
Right.
Like, he's the alert guy. Like, you're going to have a couple alerts when he comes in the game. He's going to be he go the speed guy. The other alert is Deebo Samuels. Like, taking nothing for Terry, they only going to alert Deebo Samuels because Deebo Samuels come with trickery. Deebo Samuels come with a question mark. Like, how are they going to try to get him the ball?
Right.
So he will, like, Jaylen, he will be an alert guy because of his speed from the day that he touches on the field. So that's the advantage that he's going to have, especially on this roster.
Well, they ran him on a bunch of fly sweeps and jet sweeps at Virginia Tech, too, so he may be a part of that as well. All right, so I'm going to guess when you said there's a player later in the draft that you really, really, really like, because I think you said something or something to that effect, that it's the next guy, Kane Medrano, the linebacker from UCLA.
Oh, yes, sir. His measurables are ridiculous. The fastest linebacker in the draft. And here's the thing about it. Are they going to play him at linebacker? Are they going to play him at safety?
Right.
They have two options.
Right.
Yeah, so they're going to think of it. Like, you want to talk about a flex position guy. You want to talk about a tweener. You want to talk about an alert guy when you come in on defense. Where do you play him at? Because he can do whatever you need him to do. You know how most defensive, they had this player that this special position called star?
Yeah.
Like, he will be one of those. And we drafted a couple of guys last year that also can play star. All right. And so at the end of the day, I think this guy is one of those pieces, them chess pieces on the board that they're going to make offenses find where this guy is. And I can see this guy getting on the field. I can see him getting on the field faster than people that think he can get on the field because I watched the interception that pick six that he ran back and just the athletic ability. He literally picks it off, running 60 yards, jumps over a guy before he gets to the end zone. He can do whatever needs to be done. He's a great blitzer. He's good in coverage. He's a good tackler, and he brings energy. He's a commander. Like, if I can say this, watching his film, I just smiled the whole time, Professor. I just smiled while I was watching his film.
I said the same thing in the open to the show. That's so funny. I had a feeling you were going to like him. The athleticism is one thing. But what I noticed, and you had this, and I actually compared him not athletically. It's the wrong comparison athletically. But he has that athletic anticipation. He is... Like, Micah Hyde has been one of my favorite players to watch for many, many years, not because he's a tremendous athlete. He makes up for the lack of athleticism because he has such great anticipation on where the quarterback's going, the spatial, you know, awareness to play the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy has, which is, it's interesting because I wondered the same thing. Is he going to play linebacker? Is he going to drop in coverage? Or is he going to line up at safety or star or Buffalo nickel or whatever, because it looks like he's got a lot of possibilities. But do you know what I'm saying? Because you had it too, like that anticipation, which is, you know, part of athleticism, but it's not a measurable thing.
No, it's a thing where you take what you study to the field. Like, the thing about it is anticipation is believing what you studied and taking it to the field and always being a step above. Athletics can only take you so far. Mentally, you're going to have to be able to beat some guys, and you mentally beat them by anticipating routes, knowing route combinations, knowing habits, knowing, like, such thing like a pat of the football, if you know this quarterback, like to pat the ball before he throw it. Like, it just be the smallest minutia, the smallest detail, whatever I can take. And he does play what I call ahead of the chain. When I say ahead of the chain, he's already making a move before the ball is snapped on where he wants to go because he's seen where you already lined up and be. So that's what coaches love that because they know I can coach him with the smallest detail and he will figure out the rest. And then what I say, he's a coach's delight.
Yeah, I looked this up because I've always, for whatever reason, just loved Micah Hyde. And he's never the fastest or the biggest guy by a long shot. He's got 24 career interceptions. Like, over the course of the year, he's just always been a guy, it's like, oh, there's another interception from a guy that doesn't run well, necessarily, not big, but also had the hands. And you could see the hands with... with Medrano as well. All right, what about the running back? Go ahead. Did you want to say something else about Medrano?
No, I was just going to give Micah Hyde his flowers, man. I have seen cerebral. Micah Hyde is a step faster Ryan Clark. I knows where to be, Johnny on the spot, studied enough, never going, but no wasted motion. Like, the best defensive backs in the league don't have to be the fastest. Do they have wasted motions or not? Do they, like, Deion and what's his name was arguing about a T-step. It ain't about how you get there. It's about getting there. And that's what Micah Hyde does a lot. It's never air when he's around. He's always tight to wherever he needs to be, tight to the player he needs to be, and always Johnny on the spot. So, yeah, back to the running back.
Well, hold on. One other thing, because I wanted to mention this guy, too, because, you know, as I'm sitting here, we're talking about Micah Hyde. Micah Hyde is a safety. He's never played linebacker. But the other guy that I brought up, not that, you know, they're exactly the same in a lot of ways, but the dude Van Ginkle over the last few years in Miami and then last year in Minnesota, like, I kind of see Medrano being that kind. Now, Van Ginkle is a freak, too, and a relentless pass rusher, but the way he seems to time quick throws, how many of those has he picked off in the last few years? He picked one off here from Sam Howell, you know, and returned it for a touchdown. And I think
I won up you one. How about Milano?
Milano same thing.
From the Bills.
Milano same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Van Ginkle is also really, like, he's tall and long. Like, is Medrano that tall? He might be.
No, he's more of a build of a Miles Jack. Think about Miles.
Yeah, right.
He's more of a bill of a Miles Jack.
All right. The last pick, Jacory Kroski-Merritt. His nickname's Bill. The running back who only played one game at Arizona, but played at New Mexico and Alabama State before that. What did you see in him?
Well-rounded. Like, he is – I see what the coaches and the GMs like in players. They don't like – if they get a one-dimensional player, they want you to be great at it. They'll rather have guys that's good at everything. This guy can pass block. This guy can run between the tackles. This guy can break a deep one. This guy can catch out the back. So they want football players, and this guy is epitome. He's a football player. Like, he's one of these dudes. You're going to ask me what sticks out, Smoot? Nothing. He just does everything the right way, and that's what you want from a player. Now, he's going into a room that most people don't see as a deep room. I look at that room as a hard room to get reps in. So can he get some reps? We'll see when the pads come on. But I like him because he does everything, especially in this deep running back draft. Like, if I was never going to reach for a running back in a draft, this was the draft that I was not going to reach for a running back. And by the way, the show that this team, this organization are doing things just effortless the right way.
Yep.
They did bring in Gabe Taylor, Sean Taylor's young brother.
Right.
He is coming in for camp. That's classy if I haven't seen anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, Fred the Hound Smoot giving us his best stuff. On this Monday following the draft. Love it. Thank you so much, as always. I'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Professor.
That was Smoot from my podcast on Monday. All right, there was big news with a local team yesterday. I will tell you what that was when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.